Welcome to another episode of the Wood Couture Podcast, recording live at the Oblong Contemporary Art Gallery here in Bluewater, Dubai. And today we have the absolute pleasure to welcome to our show Gabrielle Mather.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Very excited.
Very happy to be here.
For those people that do not know Gabrielle, unfortunately, bad luck, because you need to know Gabrielle. And 20 years food and beverage veteran, restaurateur, operator, and above all, one of the most trusted food and beverage consultants. And now we want to know everything about her. So the curiosity is high, you know, and we want to know where it all started from.
Thank you for that amazing introduction. I'm not sure that I deserve all those accolades, but yes, I've been here for a while. My journey has been 2 decades in the business. We started like everybody else, you know, there's a need in the market and you bring your gifts, your talents. F&B is what I do. Business, building businesses, building people is my passion. So we started very humbly, like most people do, in the garage of our house, with me driving down streets looking for, hunting for clients who might need help. After many, many disappointments and many, many tough days and nights, we slowly started building up a good portfolio of clients where we were able to help them with different reasons. Sometimes, you know, they were failing because of marketing. Sometimes they were failing because they don't know how to operate. And sometimes we had clients who had the money and didn't know where to put it. So building businesses from scratch. We've done it all over the last 2 decades.
Why food and beverage?
That's an interesting question. My now ex-husband was born into the food industry. And when we both partnered up, I just lent my passion to his vision at that point. Me personally, I was always looking for a career in the fashion industry. And one of my first businesses that failed miserably because I was so young was opening a little fashion boutique where I sold clothes that I made for myself. First mistake, not for others. But I think when we came together, food and beverage, he introduced me to food and beverage. And my storytelling, my passion for operations, for business, just came alive. And I was able to tell my story through food.
Wow. And very interesting, the hospitality, because your favorite subject were literature and history at school.
Oh, wow. You've really been doing your homework on me.
Yeah. So many people would expect you to go either into an academia or possibly another corporate environment, but, you know, with a kind of, you know, more literate, you know, environment. But instead, you chose hospitality.
I think hospitality chose me, I would say.
That?
I think when you have a passion for just being, to use your gifts, you see, the literature and the history did do its job. I'm a reader. I'm a learner for life. History teaches you what not to do, what has happened. It's important, as long as you don't live in the past and you're looking forward to the future. I think with those personal pursuits of mine, hospitality, when it came my way, was a storytelling field for me. It was very operational, but it was also about building something that people want to come to spend time and get away from their current life, you know. Why do people come and sit in a cafe? They can make coffee at home. They can make food at home. Mm-hmm. We come there for the social aspect. So being a creative soul, always looking for, you know, creative souls will always look for places to find themselves, to express themselves. Artists, we're sitting in an art gallery. This is an expression of someone's talent through art. The expression of my talent and my gifts is through building businesses, people. And hospitality has the one word in it that I love, service. It's a service industry. And my heart is to serve. So I think it all came together. It found me.
So, interesting. And also, I would say I have to recognize that when others saw a problem, you actually saw an opportunity, because you found Restaurant Secret in 2008. Right in the middle of the worst economic crisis everywhere. Why did you choose exactly that moment to say, I'm going to start my own business?
again, the moment chose me. So it happens a lot in life where opportunities come through challenges, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think my life has always been the biggest challenge that's come in my life every time has become the reason to grow, to ask questions, to find solutions and create opportunities. Because there's only two things you can do with a challenge. You either completely give up and stop and stay where you are, or you build yourself mm-hmm. and see what's coming through in that moment. So why did Restaurant Secrets happen in that recession is because we personally went through a bankruptcy. We had other businesses that collapsed. And they were F&B businesses. We were operators at that point. And in my heart, I still wanted to stay in the industry. I still wanted to be relevant. We still wanted to do things. A lot of our friends used to ask us for help during those days because we were running things well. And I think from that point that if someone asks you for help, it's the biggest compliment. It's also the biggest challenge to try and, you know, live up to that thing. And it started with consulting people just for free, just helping them to actually seeing the need in the market. With the recession, we had a lot of people losing businesses in advertising, marketing, real estate. It all collapsed. But everybody was looking at F&B as still an opportunity because people were still eating. Mm-hmm. So I think in that whole time when they say, you know, there's an economy that's collapsing, there's also a new economy that's building. There's a correction that's happening. And Restaurant Secrets happened to be born in that time. And in this pandemic, my second consultancy is being born called Cornerstone. That's an answer to what we discovered in pandemic. So yes, opportunities come through the biggest challenges. And I think we need to groom ourselves in life to be able to discern in the moment. Is this a moment to turn back? Or is this a moment to race forward and do the next best thing?
It's interesting. I was reading one of your very recent interviews and said exactly for that moment of Restaurant Secrets, while everybody else was taking franchises, we actually went organic. We went local and developed our own concept. And some people will look at that like the hard way. Consider you coming from some businesses that went bankrupt. You know, why did you choose to go organic and create your own concept rather than take brands worldwide and maybe not so well known and develop it over here?
Yeah, very good question there. It's a combination of things, right? So when I first came to the country 25 years back, all they had here was McDonald's and Burger King and fast food. And for me, I missed that. I missed that homegrown feel of food that you could enjoy. So it was always at the back of my head, that thing, that need that this country has such a great mix of cultures, but we don't see that coming through in the food. Plus, there's an entrepreneurial spirit. This, as you can see, the entire country is built, especially Dubai, is built on a spirit of entrepreneurship, of creativity, of commercial wisdom on the next ideas, of breaking barriers and going the next place. So I found that niche there, that missing part, because at that time, if you really wanted a good meal in those days, you had to go to a hotel, a five-star hotel. And that's where all the expats were going. We were just going there to eat a real meal, an Italian meal or a Mexican meal or Indian or Arabic or whatever. We didn't have, like what we have today, so many places to go to. So I found that, first of all, a niche, a missing mark. Second, there was a spirit in the market. We were getting inquiries from people who wanted to understand the difference between getting a franchise and starting their own business. It was very easy to explain to them that it's great to bring in a franchise, and there are wonderful franchises here. You can see that. The country has an amazing mix of really good homegrown and franchises. But true entrepreneurs want a kind of control over their business. At the same time, they want to have a legacy. And I think people would choose either a franchise or a standalone based on their own passion, their own budgets, and where they were at. Franchisors also need a very experienced partner. The good franchises will look for good experienced partners to take them on board. Our clients are new entrepreneurs with a dream to own a restaurant. So it sort of makes sense for them to start the journey by themselves, build a brand, and then one day franchise it. So we saw that there was a lot of interest. And our job was then to make sure that it does not become a failure by being just creative or just being a nice looking brand or just good food, but it also has the operating systems in place that can operate at the same level that a franchise does, and then maybe one day expand further. So looking at that market need, we actually developed Restaurant Secrets to be a turnkey solution company that will start with the concept, the market research, the financial study, build the entire model, launch the restaurant, and then make sure it has enough operating systems to operate it and to expand. So you get all the benefits of a well-run franchise, but you have the one benefit, which is it's your own, and you're the boss of it. You're not paying royalties. You're not paying a franchise fee. You're able to own it 100%, and then you're able to then, you know, take it to other places. I think that's still a great thing that people want that. They really want to have their own homegrown brands. And look at how much Dubai is right now exporting our brands in the rest of the world. So I think we've done a great job, not just me, but many, many other consultants and operators in the market have proven that, you know, Dubai's got something. We've done something here as a country of expats and citizens. And the world is looking at how we do F&B and wanting a piece of that pie. And I love that. That's a great place to be today.
Considering that your favorite place at school was the library, have you taken any inspiration from that?
My house is a library now.
Great. I was trying to see if you took inspiration for any of your restaurants.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think being a reader and loving being a reader exposed me to so many different genres of reading, not just business books or self-help books. Or I've been a reader of junk. I've read my own, you know, share of nonfiction, fiction, all kinds of things. What intrigued me most were how I felt when I would read a book. I would be transported to a whole different world. I was the star of that world. I could visualize myself in different countries, wearing different clothes, listening to different music, you know, being part of different cultures. And yes, it does help you, because if you look at the concepts we've built, more than 300 concepts, you cannot do that if your mind is not as an active minefield of ideas and thoughts and cultures, right? So I think all that I read, all those years that I spent reading, really helped developing concepts and understanding cultures that might not have been part of my own experience. When I did the Peruvian concept, for example, I hadn't stepped into Peru at that point. But there was enough information of Peru, the historical data, the excitement of someone's history, architecture, their food, their people, lends itself to storytelling. So I think for me that history and literature seriously helped me in being a storyteller today. I might not be, you know, at this point, I haven't seen the whole world. I do wish to see the whole world. The pandemic stopped my journey, like the rest of the world. But I feel as a reader, you have this amazing possibility of just being anywhere, anyone you want to be. When you read, you don't have to leave your couch, and you could have gone to any part of the world and back.
Throughout your journey as a professional, has there been somebody that you looked up at this person like your mentor?
Everybody has a mentor or mentors. Mm-hmm. I've had my fair share of mentors. I won't go deep into that, because the one mentor that has influenced me the most in the earth world, in the physical world, is a very private person. He's a person who is a billionaire, philanthropist, a philanthropist, mm-hmm. and of deep faith. And I'm so blessed to have been mentored by someone like that, because it has influenced my own business strategies. I do business by the book. When I say business by the book, I'm a woman of faith. So every single principle that I live my life is also applies to how I do business. I'm not going to say it's easy, but at the same time, it's not difficult either, because principles and values are all written here. It's a level of integrity inside you. So to work from there is a natural, organic, you know, wish of a human to work from there. It's when you don't get it back that things shift. And that balance of being able to work from that place and handle things when they don't come your way will always be a lifelong journey. So this mentor has helped me to prove that you can be a wealthy person, you can manage wealth well, you can give back, you can create sustainable businesses, you can be good to people, you can accept challenges and grow from them, and you can take advantage of opportunities without disrupting someone else's life or hurting someone. That's been my biggest lesson from my mentor. And otherwise, I'm very inspired by greats like Oprah Winfrey. I'm inspired by Andrew Carnegie. He was, I think, until today, the wealthiest man who ever lived. Even Bezos has not overridden, I think, his wealth in today's times. He was in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Napoleon Hill's work, which is inspired by Andrew Carnegie, Winston Churchill, and my book of faith, the Bible. It still remains for me the place I go to for the biggest leadership lessons. A leadership that is a servant-based service mentality comes from there for me.
What about Stephen Covey?
Stephen Covey is also a huge... Wow, you really read up on me. Stephen Covey is the first book that we give to our people who join the team. It's called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I think it really helps anyone from any field, a believer, non-believer, a startup, an experienced person, to just synchronize back to what really matters. And there's some great, great education in that book. Yeah, I think schools should have that book as part of...
That's a good advice. Yeah. We should actually recommend it. What is the best practical advice these billionaire mentors have given you?
I think every advice that I've received over the years from trusted people has a level of practicality, but at the same time, people operate from emotions. They operate from passion. As long as my heart is in the right place, and when I say my heart is in the right place, it does not mean from a level of desire of what I want, but from what I believe is right or wrong. We need to have the courage to act on it. He taught me, learn to say no, be able to say no. That's always been my biggest challenge. Because when I'm talking about service mentality, when I'm talking about caring, when I'm talking about helping people, there's always a risk of being taken advantage of. So learning how to say no is something I really would not have learned if I would not have been mentored in the way of being firm in my beliefs, still serving with passion, saying more yeses, but also saying the crucial no at the right time. And the one word that he always said to me was, seek first his kingdom and righteousness, and all things will be given to you. Might not sound practical to many people, but I think things that seem very practical to the human eye are sometimes quite foolish. So for me, that seeking first the purpose of what I do, a forecast of how many people will get impacted by my actions, what do my decisions mean today, and what do they mean 5 years from now, has been my guiding principle to make sure that I've thought it over, I've discerned it, I've used wisdom, and I've used the word of truth before I do something.
What's your favorite failure?
What's my favorite value?
Failure.
Failure, my failure. Favorite failure. Wow, failure and favorite. You got something interesting there. Every failure that I've had in my life has always turned out to lead to something amazing, something that I never thought in that moment would happen. When you go with faith during a process of failing, you learn to embrace it. You learn to allow the suffering to happen. For a short time, you don't get lost in that. You need to learn from it to move to the answers that come through. They push you. Failures push you into a learning method. They lead you into meditation, into rethinking who you are and who you're not. Every failure of mine has led to the next victory, the next success. So I embrace them all. And no, I don't have a favorite failure. Seriously, I don't. I think each one has done its part. Each one has done its job. And there will be more to come. That's part of life. No one is perfect. So I just pray that during all my ups and downs, that I would remain in grace to be able to not ask too many questions on why, but more of what do I do next? Where do I go from here?
Have you ever felt vulnerable?
Always. Absolutely.
So what's your form of protection for your vulnerability?
Why do you have to feel that you have to be protected in a state of vulnerability? Sometimes vulnerability is just there because it's there. I'm vulnerable when I am meeting a client for the first time. I'm vulnerable when I'm making decisions about someone's business strategy that is going to cost millions. I'm vulnerable when my team sits down with me and I have to make a decision that can impact their lives or the others. I think when people look at vulnerability as a weakness, that is when you want to build an armor or strength around it. I think accepting that we are creatures of different feelings and emotions, and they all work together. Because in vulnerability, your emotions come through, your humanistic side comes through. So you look at things from a win-win situation. The Stephen Covey way, you know, understand before being understood, those kind of things. They can't happen if you're not feeling vulnerable. If you're always feeling like you're on top of it and no one can beat you, your decisions could be very, very different. If you're not in that place of understanding that this is a moment where I'm so human and I need something more divine to lead me to where I'm going. So no, I don't think I build up walls. I think what I do is I pray for protection of my own heart and my own vulnerabilities from the right source. But I don't let it stop me from entering a space of where I have to do, to be and what I have to do.
Very interesting. What is something that you will never compromise?
Something I will never compromise?
Yeah.
My values. I do business by the book. I do life by the book. If I feel that something is going to impact my decision today or something I do today will impact the lives of others, my life, anything that I feel could not be something that came from the authentic me, I won't do it.
Do you think it's fair to not judge but criticize the book by the cover?
I think there's a reason why we are not judges. We're not good at that. It's not our job to judge. We do stereotype. We do like to read books. And we choose them by the cover when we buy them. You know, at least from who wrote it and a tiny... So yes, we do need something to go with. But I think I'd rather call it first impressions. They're important. Presentation is important. I love it when I am impressed by something and it takes me further. I think we all need to have that art of being able to present and be on the receiving end of a great presentation. But judging is not something I'm so glad that I don't have to do. And critiquing something or someone to leave them with a word of positivity, you know, encouraging them to seeing in them a positive thing and building that up and you know, calling out the good in them helps more than showing them what's not good. I've seen when you tell even your child, your teenager, who might be doing so bad at school, might be making all the bad mistakes, but when you tell him who you see, who God sees him, that you're kind, you're intelligent, you're wise, you're meant for big things, the human's chest puffs up. We love hearing not who we are, but who we could be one day. I think that's, for me, it's always looking at someone and seeing, picking up the things that they're good at and what I see is positive and building that up is my place, is where I'd like to be, rather than criticizing what they don't have.
I want to read one of your quotes because there is two quotes that come up in most of your recent interview. It is time for food and beverage leaders to start taking the
accountability.
Yeah, financial and operation management standard seriously.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a statement. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, they look at the closures we've had. Look at the corrections we've had to do in the market. Why do they happen? If you look at the history of the restaurants that have closed here, a lot of people love them. A lot of people actually were sad when these restaurants closed. That shows that there was something happening there as a concept, as a brand, as a service industry, as food, that was making sense. But there was something behind the scenes. The engines were not working right. People were enjoying the food, but maybe the owner was not making money. Maybe everybody was getting paid except the owner. Maybe everybody was getting paid, but not the landlord or not the staff. So these stories that come to light are a direct result of someone not understanding that this industry is run by numbers. That if your rent is, it goes beyond 10%, then that 2 or 3 extra percent goes from your profit. If your food cost is not operating at a healthy 25%, if it's gone to 30, that 5% is going from your profits. You know, if your packaging has gone above 1 or 2%, it's going from your profits. It's a 100% equation, and everything has to add up. And when it goes beyond 100%, when your cost of running a business is 120% of what your sale is, that's where you lose money. And most people don't even know when they're losing money, that they're losing money, because they haven't seen a P&L. They haven't seen a profit and loss, a balance sheet. They haven't been watching their food costs. They don't know what's sitting on their shelves and inventory. They don't know that the burger they're selling at this price actually should be and could be sold at this price with the right marketing. And the answer is usually to fire people or reduce salaries or to cut down on quality, which then is a disaster because, again, that's not an answer. It actually takes things down. So training ourselves to have passion for what we do, but also have that balance of logic and business acumen and financial logic of what we do teaches us the accountability, the responsibility of what we're doing, because our responsibility is finally to pay back our people and ourselves. That's why we open a business. It's a commercial decision. Mm-hmm. And without this important factor, which people either delegate to an accountant or they feel, I'm just going to cook food, sell food, and somehow it's going to make sense, really needs to stop now. And we need to start with those kind of investments into educating ourselves in F&B rather than the investment into great design and great food. And I mean, that's important. What I'm saying is we need to add on to that list of things that we love doing, the fun stuff, which is getting the food organized, the interiors, the people. We also need to understand that if I don't know how to do numbers, I need to learn this, because this is going to be, as an owner, should be my first thing I see in the morning and the last thing I see. How did we perform? Mm-hmm. How did our, you know, how do our numbers look? And if they're not looking good, what's the solution to it? I think that's an important part of today's...
You passionately also repeat many times in your interviews that your passion, your drive is to help people opening businesses in an excellent way. Because clearly you described before, the people don't even know why they're losing money. They don't look into the dynamics of the business. The question I have for you is this. Quite often we interview a lot of people, whether it's from the design industry, hospitality industry, and for some reasons, what prevails today is having places that are good for Instagram rather than having a good food. Is that the reality of the food, the restaurant business nowadays?
You got quite a few questions there. You asked me about excellence and then about Instagram versus substance, perhaps, right? I think it's all important. We cannot take our eye off where we as a generation are heading. So we are an Instagram nation. We are a world that wants entertainment. We want to be not just entertained, but we also want to feel, when we're in a place, the aspirational connection to the brand. What used to be only for the fashion or luxury industry, where people would buy into brands because it was how they felt about themselves and their status quo, F&B has started becoming one of those status quo now, where you spend your money, where you're seen dining, and where you're partying, and where you're going out. So Instagram and all the glamour of the industry is important. It's part of our industry. So we need to understand that, and we need to continue creating relevant brands that touch hearts. Why I say that the rest is important too is because at the end of the day, it's F&B. They came there for the food. They came there for the drinks. They came there to dine. So if we take that important part away just because we got the others right, that's not okay either. I think you need a balance, and that's the best operators are the ones who are bringing that balance, who have a great menu, have great service, have great interiors. That is sustainable business. Otherwise, it's just a pop-up that people will visit, take pictures, and then go to the next one. It's a hit-and-run kind of business. You don't want to be in the hit-and-run business. You want to be in a business that is sustainable and that keeps on evolving and growing with you and with the generations to come. And that is why we need to aim for excellence, because when we aim for anything less than excellence, we land up with much lower than even mediocre. So when you aim for mediocre, you're going to get, you know what you're going to get. And the reason I say excellence and not perfection is because perfection is where we actually go crazy. We cannot be perfect. We're not meant to be perfect. And when I've seen people strive for that, they actually even lose out on something amazing in front of them, because they have this, what they call the unicorn kind of thing, where you're ticking off boxes, you're ticking off, but you're still not satisfied. There's still something missing. And that is a scary place to be. So I aim for that part where I feel this is done excellently. I've done my 100%. And I encourage others, do your 100%. Bring your best to it. And then walk away from it knowing you've done your 100%. I think when you do that, you're true to yourself, your talent, and what you do, it results in an excellent product, as long as you keep that mark. And excellence, for me, is everything. The Instagrammable thing, yes. I love to see interiors that you want to Instagram. But you don't compromise on your core products, your food, your people, your ambiance, everything else, yeah.
Is the ambition of a restaurateur to eventually own a Michelin star restaurant, or is it not necessarily the ultimate?
For some, maybe. The Michelin is still relevant in many ways, but then, you know, we've got our own way now of rewarding talent. If you notice what's going on in the world, we've gone into a much needed direction that is more, I would say, more adapted to our lifestyle today. So I don't think everybody wants to go there. It depends on what kind of brand you have, what your vision is. Our clients that have done brands like Donut Gyros, which is like a sandwich place with 50 branches, is not aiming for Michelin. They're aiming for scalability. They're aiming for franchising their brands, taking it to the rest of the world to have passive income through franchise. So that's a whole different vision. And some are the ones who will open one place and do it really well and very custom built and will want to go for, you know, those kind of awards. I think the great thing about F&B is that there's so much that we can do, from delivery brands to kiosks to food trucks to licensed entertainment places to casual dining to specialty coffee. I think everyone's vision is different. And as a consultant, my job is to understand your vision, your goals, your passion, and also your investment capacity or capability and where you're at, and then work with you one-to-one to achieve that for you.
But it's interesting that somebody that loved history and literature, so very artistic, very literate, fashion and luxury were your favorite things, and then I don't know, maybe you have, or I didn't do my research well, not end up having a Michelin style restaurant, you know, where it's very sophisticated environment. And I can see you with your passions, according to what I read, leading a restaurant like that. And you haven't, or you have, I don't know, you know, it is, why is that?
I'm not done yet.
That's a big assumption you've probably done.
Love that question, actually. I'll tell you why it hasn't happened yet. You remember we spoke about putting homegrown brands.
Yes.
Meeting the need of the market. Now, homegrown brands on the street do not come licensed. You remember I said about hotels being the only place to go to. So these were places where you can have a drink and you can have a meal. Our target market has been 90% GCC and UAE nationals. And with the way the cultural implications of this part of the world, we don't need to have wine on the menu to enjoy a great meal, as you noticed. So most of our work has been catering to the non-licensed. When I say non-licensed, I mean where there's no alcohol, but there's everything else there. You have the entire experience, but you don't serve alcohol. That's been our main strength in this part of the world. And because of the build of our clientele, we just became better and better and more expert at doing those kind of casual diners, casual restaurants. When we acquired the Emaar properties, licensed properties in downtown, and launched Lincoln Hospitality in 2018, it gave us a chance again to test our skills in that area. And these were brands that were already operational, and we picked them up. And we've built them from a certain level to a whole new level, and they're getting franchised now. They're going to the next level. But at my heart, there is a restaurant. There's a dream restaurant that one day, when the time comes, when the opportunity comes knocking, I will open that door and the doors to this restaurant. And maybe not Michelin, but it will be something very creative. It'll be an extension of my personality. At the same time, all the work that I've done, I'm hoping it will translate itself into a great F&B experience, menu, wine list, music. I've always been inspired by the movie Titanic, where I thought that the way they dined in that ship and the way they dressed up and came down for dinner was something that always played with my mind. And I see restaurants still having that glamour, having that whole unraveling of drama in a night. And I think I'm looking forward to when that opportunity comes my way.
Perhaps a different name. You don't want the restaurant to sink.
No way. Absolutely. We will come up with a great name. We've always done that, yeah.
I'm sure. Is there a restaurant or any of your concept that you created that, although I'm sure you love them all because you create them all, but one that stands out because it's very close to you, that reminds you of something or a moment?
Yeah. The Hamptons Cafe. This was a piece of me, totally. This was the cafe that I would have opened up for myself. The design philosophy is how I built my own house, for example. The food and beverage, the experience there, it's an extension of me. And fortunately, it also happened to be liked by a lot. So it still remains one of my favorite projects. And one of the reasons why it is so successful today and has branched out with 3 branches is because the owner brought the second part of the story to it. Because we can make so many concepts for people. We can build amazing things, give them to you and trust them to you and walk away from it. But what you do with it later, if you take that passion, what we've started, and complete it with leadership, with resources, with continuous evolution and refurbishment, taking care of your people, re-engineering your menus, and you keep that story going, it turns into a success. And that's why Hamptons is my favorite today. Not just because I enjoyed working on it, but I also enjoyed working with the owner who added on that second half and achieved the goal that I always have when I do a concept, a successful restaurant, a restaurant that is serving the city and its people, and is remaining relevant during the time. So Hamptons, by far, is my, I would say, the baby that, unfortunately, is a little bit more loved than the other babies.
You chose the best. I have one next to my house, and I love it.
The Pavilion?
Or? No, Arabian Ranches.
Okay, yes. We live close by to each other.
Yeah, I love that place. It's my favorite. But do you know what I admired about a place? The warmth of the design. You go in, there is no room that is cold. Mm. The design, the look and feel, a lot of artwork, accessories everywhere, feels it. For me, because we are in the furniture business, the furniture for me is the dress, the artwork is the lipstick. So when you go in there, you feel in a beautiful place. Mm. So well done, I love it.
Thank you.
The question I have is this. Maybe it's my Italian roots that influence my question. People tend to remember restaurants by the menu, while nowadays people remember by the concept. Why is that? You know, in the old days when I wanted to go and eat a good pizza, I would go to that place independently of the look and feel, because I knew the pizza tasted incredible. Or even if I was in London, the best English breakfast, it would be in a place where, or the best afternoon tea, it was in places that are very unusual, away from the probably the most publicized places. But nowadays people are driven by, oh, let's go there, it's a cool place, nice music. But they don't remember what's on the menu. The question I have is, second question, the first one is, why is that? And the question is the restaurant business becoming a commodity of brands rather than a place to go and eat good food?
You see, it's what you're looking for, right? You remember what you said, that you went there to eat. What was your desire? What was in your mind was to eat a good pizza or to eat a good meal. And then you choose a restaurant that is marketing itself, a brand or a concept that is being reviewed or is famous for what you're looking for. Sometimes you're looking for a Saturday brunch. It used to be the Friday brunch. But there are people who are looking for, let's take that as an example. They want to spend 4 hours having fun, forgetting the week that they've had, you know, just letting down their hair. They want to eat, dance, drink, and totally go OTT, where they're looking for the music, the ambiance, the vibe, the feeling. Now, at that point, is what they're going to eat, is that what is the desire in their head? Or is it how I'm going to feel, how I'm going to party? Is the desire in their head. So the choice is made based on what that offer is. And a brand that is marketing a Saturday brunch, if it focuses only on the food and forgets the other elements why people are coming, is going to lose out. But then again, a brand that's doing all of that but dishing out really poor food might make it for a while. But the minute a brand comes in that gives you all that plus the good food, obviously they're the ones that are going to attract the best crowd, because they're giving you the experience, the value, and the food. It's the whole package. I think as business owners, we need to aim for that whole package. We need to go for excellence in each area, each pillar. So we do need to offer what they're looking for in the desire level, but our USP then could be that we also have great food, we also have great service, and we have the whole package. There are still restaurants that will bring in the crowd for their product. And then there are restaurants that will bring in the crowd for the experience. I hope my answer is not confusing you. What I'm trying to say here is everything is important. You need the whole package. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at the top 50 restaurants, so when you look at the ones that win awards, they've actually ticked all the boxes. They did not let anything compromise. And they're offering you everything. They're bold enough to have the brunch. They're bold enough to have an a la carte. They can offer you a great lunch, a dinner, a business lunch. They do everything. And they do it really well, and that's what people want. So there's no need to compromise. We can do great food too while we're doing great music and great entertainment. Your second question, could you repeat that again? I think I lost it.
That if the restaurant business is being commoditized,
a commodity,
that is more the brands over the food.
I think as long as there is a need in the market, and the more the need grows, there will be smart business owners, entrepreneurs who will tap into it. Of course, food is a business. It's a huge business. If you look at the numbers of closures, it's nothing compared to the revenue. That's why people take that risk and take that chance, because they know that the profit margins in this, or you know where you can go with this, is so much beyond the other businesses. Food and beverage is famous for very high profit margins if done right, compared to other more stable businesses, but very low margins on that. So yes, there will be those who will exploit it. And from that exploitation, we will have oversupply that exceeds the demand and will lead to more closures. But then again, it will also lead to survival of the fittest and the stronger coming up. My answer is yes, it is. Brands, it's a brand business. That's why I see the affinity with luxury and with fashion, and it's because it's become an aspirational thing. Dining out is unfortunately becoming something not just to sustain a need of your stomach, but a desire to eat that food in that environment, to be in that place and to be seen. So our decisions to go out are not just to fill an appetite or hunger for food, but for something more than that, you know? So yes, in a way, yes, it is becoming.
There are many industries that, always in the context of, let's say, operations, there are many industries that are progressing quite well, the topic of gender equality. And I often see talented and beautiful women as hostesses at the front door of the restaurants, but very few as restaurant managers. You know, what's your opinion about this topic within the food and beverage industry? Are the industry doing enough to push women into leadership positions, management positions, rather than the stereotypical jobs of?
I think the F&B industry, actually, overall, at least for me, the way I have recruited or the way I have grown in the industry myself, people trust women more in many, many roles, especially in a hospitality role. The softness, the femininity of a woman was a balance of logic and able to expertise or able to operate is a great combination that many women can bring to the table. I think women have an advantage in F&B if we use it well, if we use it the right way. And how do we use it the right way? It's simple. It's not easy. Nothing is easy. No journey is easy. Not for a man, not for a woman. We all go through different competitive edges. We go through different biases. We go through different challenges. I think the common factor in people who make it in the end is the grit, the you know, not giving up, knowing who you are, where you want to go, educating yourself constantly, learning, coming up the hard way. You could start as a hostess and reach the restaurant manager position because you've chosen to actually spend your time not just behind the desk answering calls, but actually asking questions and educating yourself, asking your supervisors for chances. If you don't get the chance, so what? Don't give up. The next job, the next job. There's always someone wanting to mentor you and someone wanting to be mentor. I think opportunity needs an opportunist. It needs two people, you know, a situation to happen where when this happens, this magic happens of opportunity and opportunist, growth happens. And it's the same in our industry. I've seen girls join in as hostesses, become receptionist managers, turn into supervisors, turn into restaurant managers. I think there is no ceiling if we choose to believe there is no ceiling. And if you choose to believe there is one, we could be walking all our lives with our heads knocking on something that doesn't exist. So I wouldn't say that our industry has any more bias than the others. I'd love to see more encouragement in organizations to encourage young people, male and female both, and to choose your managers, your leaders by merit, and also to mentor people. I think that's what is missing so much, where leaders don't understand that you need to work in a way to make your position redundant. You know, it's. Do I want to stay a GM for the rest of my life, or do I want to go into a CEO level? If a man or woman thinks like that, they will naturally mentor and delegate for the ladder to go up, to make their own position redundant one day. And I think we need more of that, and that's when people will actually grow, when the top allows that growth to come up, yeah.
So, flash question, if your son tomorrow says, Mom, I want to carry on what you're doing, what would be your advice to him?
Yeah, I don't think he will, but...
Thanks, God. I'm joking.
I think we all have this, when we give birth, when we become parents, we all have this wish to see our unfulfilled dreams or them to be a reflection of us, a better version of us. You know, everything we failed or didn't do, we want them to achieve that. Fortunately, I've gone through that and I've realized that every human is an individual. And our job as parents, as leaders, is to see that in that person. And as I said, call out those good things and allow them to learn, make mistakes and grow and find themselves in this world. So if he does say that, he wants to go my way, I'll start him at the bottom, you know, maybe get dishes done, serve people, peel potatoes, understand the different areas, but then also see the areas that he's the most keen on. If it's strategy, if it's creativity, if it's operations, choose that. And I hope I will be the best mentor ever.
I'm sure you will. You told us or revealed to us that you have this dream about this restaurant, an extension of you, one day. What else is in your bucket list?
So many things that I won't tell on camera, but one of the things that is the company that I launched a few months back. I need to take that to the next level. So I'm working on building up these solutions for clients. It's called Cornerstone 61, and it helps people with marketing, financial management, operational management of their businesses. We're also on the verge of, at this point, strategizing a design studio that will also complete not just the design, but the build of restaurants, because that's an area I've noticed where we have missing excellence in the market, because our construction and fit-out industry is huge. There's so much in the market. And there are great players in the market that do very good F&B fit-out. But they're very good at the top level of large budgets, but at the mid-level, where most of my clients are, that's an area that we find falls a lot, which results in late openings, which results in people paying salaries and rents and fit out never reaching the 1 month, 2 month, 3 month mark. So one of my visions is to actually establish a studio that does the design and the build, value engineers the whole thing, does it in budgets and within timelines, and does it for as a boutique way for select few small to medium sized restaurants. So that's something that I'm hoping would happen this year. I'm also working with some really successful and charismatic and very, very strong women of substance to launch a women's organization that helps young women to not make the mistakes that perhaps I see happening a lot, to learn that nothing is easy. And if you wish to have that amazing house, you wish to have that amazing holiday and drive that car, and have that what you see around you flashing, you can earn it. There is a way that you can actually do it yourself. You don't need someone to do it for you. You don't need a father, a husband, or a sponsor to help you. That's an organization that we want to start for women to come into from any stage of life and learn from other women who've done it the hard way. And if we can support people from making mistakes that cause heartaches and pain later on, I think that'll be a great thing to be able to achieve. I think that's quite a bit, huh, for the year.
Handful. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our discussions. I can stay here forever talking to you, because I'm sure there's plenty more. This is just a sprinkle.
And we haven't even started asking you questions. Imagine that.
It's about you. I'll be happy to support your organization. I have a daughter, so. And
it's wonderful.
It's very close to me, the subject. And but we also very supportive of the topic of gender equality and supporting women in business and in life also. And so I do it first in my organization. So I put with them the money in my mouth first, where my mouth is, and then I support others. So the final question that I'm very intrigued. If I put a massive white canvas on top of Burj Khalifa, what message would you write on that?
Come to Dubai.
Wow.
It's trending right now everywhere. I come to Dubai.
Wow.
No, jokes aside.
Your personal message to the world.
Wow. I would have to think so much, because there's so many things I could and would want to say. How many days with the canvas? Can I change it every single day?
Let's start with the first week.
I really would want to tell people that let faith conquer your fears. Have hope. Tomorrow is another day. Life is what you make of it. So I would encourage people to have faith. We all need faith. We all need hope. At the end of the day, wherever we're from, whatever is our bank balance, whatever car we drive, we still need food. We still have blood in our veins. We still hurt, all of us, for the same reasons. So be yourself and have faith. Have faith.
Dear Gabriel, an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.